So FanBeam, once again, the setup, it rotates 3 times a second, just for your mechanical inspiration here. And here you have your curved detector. And in modern CT scanners, this detector is not just a single line, but it's multiple lines. And that means that we have, instead of a fan beam, a cone beam geometry. And I told you that roughly 10 years ago, industry started to build in detectors with multiple lines. So industry started with 4 lines, with 8 lines, with 16 lines. 256 lines, and now they are no longer talking about lines. Yeah. So that's the scanner we consider. And now let's look at different acquisition geometries. So what you can do is you can first, think of reconstructing an object, let's say okay, and you can say I rotate around the object here like this and I rotate around the object and I do a reconstruction of the central slice using FanBeam. I move the table a little bit. I reconstruct the next slice, so I do a slice by slice reconstruction. A slice by slice reconstruction. And so I move the table, for instance, in. And I do a reconstruction slice by slice. What we assume here is that the projection rays are always orthogonal to the rotation axis. So perpendicular to the rotation axis. But what we also could do is, for instance, we could tilt the CT scanner a little bit. We could tilt the CT scanner. Yeah, we tilt it. And so the table and the CT scanner are no longer perpendicular to each other, but we have a different angle than 90 degrees. Yeah? That means that the line integrals are no longer perpendicular to the rotation axis. Okay? And that's also a problem. And the question is, how does it affect the reconstruction algorithm? Now we always say we have a 2D function that we want to reconstruct, and then we rotate around the object and do a standard back projection reconstruction. Now things are tilted, and of course you can say we compute the tilted 2D sections or intersections, the 2D planes that are not perpendicular to the rotation axis, and reconstruct this step by step and look at the reconstruction result. And before we look into the general cone beam situation, we look at the parallel projection scheme here. So think about the three-dimensional object we want to reconstruct. Yeah? It's a tomato or something like that. And we have parallel projection lines. Parallel projection lines, that means the X-ray particles are projected on the detector by using parallel X-ray beams. parallel X-ray beams. And what we can do is we can then look at the Fourier transform of this 2D projection plane. And like we did it in the 1D, 2D case, we can show that this plane here in the Fourier domain corresponds to this plane here in the 3D Fourier transform of the function to be reconstructed. Okay? So if I have parallel projections, I have a 2D image acquired with parallel projections, I can compute the Fourier transform of that and take the plane and put it into 3D space right parallel to the detector plane in 3D, and I sample the 3D Fourier transform of the function to be reconstructed. Okay? That's a generalization of the Fourier slice theorem that we know from the 2D, 1D case. Okay? If you look at the proof of the Fourier slice theorem, it really can be lifted easily to the higher dimensional situation. So we reconstruct the n-dimensional function from n minus one dimensional projections by using the Fourier slice theorem. It can be generalized. And that means I have to walk around the object, acquire images, and I want to sample the three-dimensional Fourier transform as much or as dense as possible, and then I do the reconstruction by applying the inverse Fourier transform. So, and now let's think about the following situation. Do I have a... So this is my detector, this is my rotation axis, and can you hold your finger into the air? Yeah, there is the X-ray source, huh? This is the detector, and then we rotate.
Yeah.
You have this in mind. Okay, that means we get here a Fourier transform, here a Fourier transform, here a Fourier transform, and that means if I put them all into one coordinate system centered at the origin of the Fourier space or frequency space, we get a bundle of planes. Yeah, we get a star of planes. And then we do the inverse Fourier transform. Again, we have here cylindrical coordinates. Yeah? Like we had polar coordinates in one slice, we have here cylindrical coordinates, and the Fourier transform is given in cylindrical coordinates. Yeah? Once again, the situation, this is the direction of the projection. Then we get one plane defined by our detector and its position in space. We compute the Fourier transform, and then we stick the Fourier transforms together if we rotate around the object for various theta angles. Okay? And we get this bundle, and we have to compute the inverse Fourier transform. So if we have a X-ray source with parallel X-ray beams, we could rotate around the object like in a CT scanner, and then we collect the Fourier samples, and then we apply the inverse Fourier transform and do reconstruction. Unfortunately, we don't have parallel X-ray beams, yeah? So that makes things a little more complicated. We always have a focal point where all the X-ray beams intersect, and that means the situation as it is described here will not be achieved in the real world. So, and now let's think about the sampling of the Fourier space if we don't have orthogonal projection lines, but we have here an intersection of the projection lines with the optical axis where the angle is non-equal to 90 degrees. What happens to the sampling of the Fourier space? That means that you miss a cone in the Fourier domain. You miss samples in a cone. There are some triangular structures. If you think about your planes, you stick your planes together in parallel case like this, and you rotate around the axis, and you sample in cylindrical coordinates the space. If you tilt and then rotate the plane, then you have a cone in the upper part and a cone in the lower part where you don't have samples. You see that? Once again, if I rotate this, I sample the 3D space in polar coordinates using the sample sitting here. If I tilt it a little bit and rotate around the axis, I sample, but in this cone here, given by the rotation angle, I don't get samples. Here I have a cone, and here I have a cone. I don't have samples. You see that? I cover the space, but I don't cover here this double cone. It has this type of structure. So here I have missing data. Missing data. You got that, Stefan?
I'm thinking about where is the rotation axis in your...
Once again, the picture for all of you. Here, orthogonal, I sample it. Here, I sample it. And so I miss the lower cone and the upper cone. Okay, so I have incomplete data, missing data. And these data, they will lead to artifacts in the reconstruction. They will lead to artifacts. I will have artifacts in the reconstruction. And when we now design algorithms for reconstruction, we always have to consider how well we sample the Fourier transform. Which part is missing, which part is sampled twice for a weighting scheme, which part is missing. And that's important to come up at the end with the reconstruction algorithm and with the analysis of the reconstruction algorithm. Yeah. So if we, and now we start to abstract a little more when we talk about 3D acquisition scenarios, what we look at is, we look at the focal point. And we assume that the focal point is moving on a sphere, okay? Yeah. The focal point of our X-ray system is moving on a sphere. We do not change the source detector distance, this is constant. And if we move around the object, we always move on the surface of a sphere. Yeah. And without being restrictive, we can say this sphere has radius 1, whatever unit it is, okay? So we move our source, X-ray source, on a sphere. And what we can say is, for parallel projection lines, for parallel projection lines, we have viewing directions. Yeah, and we can consider the viewing directions by looking at the angle theta, and we have here the sphere characterizing the different viewing directions. The different viewing directions. And here we have the great circle. The great circle is the one that it has radius 1. And if we move our X-ray source and our detector, our parallel X-ray source and the detector, on a circle that is a great circle, we can sample the Fourier transform completely. If we move on a small circle, a smaller one, not a great circle, then we have incomplete data. And there is Orlov's condition for reconstruction, a complete data set. And complete means, in a sense, that we sample the 3D Fourier transform properly. A complete data set can be obtained if every great circle intersects the trajectory. So we can draw in here an infinite number of great circles. And we get a complete data set if every great circle intersects with the trajectory of your acquisition geometry. Yeah? Intersects with the acquisition geometry. And if you look at this, if you have this type of rotation angle, so you have here your viewing directions, yeah? This direction. So you have here your viewing directions. You just look at the object from this viewing direction, you get this circle, a small circle, and there is an infinite number of great circles sitting below that do not intersect with this. Okay? And now you can look at different acquisition geometries and look how much or how well they fulfill this condition. If you move around the object and you view from all directions you can think of on the unit sphere, from all directions, of course, you get a complete data set. Yeah? You get a complete data set from all the directions. You have your star of projection planes. If you use these points, if you look from these points that are here grayish, of course the great circle is included here, and that means that this is also complete. Or if you move around the object on this sinusoid function here, all the great circles intersect, so you can do a proper sampling of the Fourier space. So if you have a CT system where your detector is going up and down on a sinusoid curve, you also get complete data. Of course, you don't get an equidistant sampling of the Fourier space, but you get planes everywhere in the Fourier space. If you sample here on this small circle, of course, this great circle is not included, so it's incomplete. And the same is if you have here samples acquired from just parts of the surface. Then you miss viewing directions because there are great circles that do not intersect due to Orlov's condition. Yeah. That means if you look at mammography systems, yeah, where you have just a limited angle, of course, you can only reconstruct part of the 3D structures. If you don't rotate around the object to make sure that you intersect with the large circle, with all the possible large circles, you will get incomplete data, and that means you will get artifacts. And the question is, how much do the artifacts influence your reconstruction result? And it turns out that from certain directions, if you look at the data set, you get good views, and if you look from the side where no acquisition was actually done, you get poor reconstruction results. So as an homework, for instance, you can look at the planes that are associated. Let me just draw this here. So that's one circle, and that's the other circle. So, how do we have to read this figure here? We have here our center, and these are the different viewing directions. So that means we take orthogonal projections. Yeah, we take orthogonal projections to the viewing direction angles here. So we move around this circle and we move around this circle, and you see that we miss parts in the Fourier space, and it's a nice exercise to think about. If I move here and I get these 2D Fourier transforms, and if I move this way and I get these Fourier transforms, it's clear that you get here different types of bundles and parts, again cones of the Fourier transform, of the 3D Fourier transforms are not sampled. Yeah, you have gaps. And it's interesting to think about how many gaps you get in there. And that's also something we study in detail, also in research. You have an arbitrary trajectory, for instance, a helix trajectory or any other trajectory, circle line trajectory, and you want to analyze the coverage of the Fourier space by looking at the projections. Yeah? Compute the way the Fourier space is sampled according to the given acquisition geometry. And we do closed form computations in simple situations like this one, but if you have more complex trajectories, and with this robot arm you have seen, you can more or less do any trajectory. Usually we simulate the coverage of the Fourier domain and try to find out where do we have samples, where do we have dense samples, where do we have sparse samples, and where do we have gaps. Yeah, and we always try to find additional views to close the gaps in the Fourier space, because if we have sampled the Fourier space completely, we lack some information for reconstruction. Okay? So also here, we have this type of viewing directions. That means we don't capture views from this direction here and from these directions here, but only from these directions here. The question is, does it cover the Fourier space completely? And the answer is yes, because all the large circles that we can think of intersect here with this area. Yeah? So once again, we have our 3D space, and then we have our viewing direction theta. Our viewing direction theta that tells us where the plane that we are considering our projection plane is orthogonal on. Okay. Good. Yes?
Could you explain again? Because at first I understood that this circle you draw, it was an incomplete data set, because you had you were considering the small circles, the not the great circles.
Yeah.
And now you're saying it's a complete data set?
Yes, because in the first case we had only the directions that are sitting on this small circle, and now we have all the directions that sit on this shell.
It's not the same.
No, it's another example.
Okay.
This is. The professor is confusing. So I did this figure where I said the viewing directions sit here on the small circle, and then I did this figure where I take things in between and I extend it, and that was didactical point of view a disaster. I extended the previous example that was not full coverage by a figure that ends up with a full coverage. I'm very sorry about this. Okay. And this is recorded. Yes, please.
In the first example,
Leah,
where you miss that data, is it a small bowl in the middle that you miss? Or what is the geometry that you miss?
Which?
With the first example, with the two circles. Yeah, this one.
So you have your orthogonal view on a small circle. Yeah? So if you do that, you miss again a cone here for the above circle. Okay? You miss a cone here. And then if you go down and you walk around, you miss another cone. And then you have to overlap the two cones, and it will remain, I think, basically the same situation like this one here.
Okay, I thought these two things are doing it like everywhere like this, and then you miss the middle.
No, I mean, what does it mean? These are your viewing directions, right? And you are orthogonally going around, and then you have to shift it to the center of your Fourier space.
Okay.
Yeah, and that means that you get this double cone structure. Yeah? For these simple situations, you still can grasp it by intuition. If you have more complex situations, more complex acquisition geometries, usually you have to plot it and to look at it. Yeah? Generate the plots and look at the coverage. Okay, and reconstruction. And reconstruction in the 2D, 1D case was basically written in terms of a product of two Fourier transforms. You remember that? You multiply Fourier transforms, then you apply the inverse Fourier transform, and then you integrate up over all the viewing directions. And we came up with a ramp filter. Where did the ramp filter come from? The ramp filter is nothing else but the Jacobian of the coordinate transform. Yeah, it's nothing else but the Jacobian of the polar Cartesian transform. And we also found out by looking at the different acquisition geometries, parallel beam, fan beam geometry, that the point spread function, the way a point is smeared, is the same for the two different projection geometries. And then we came up with the idea of saying, okay, we use the original signal, we smear it by the point spread function, and we end up with a reconstruction result. And the point spread function in 2D was given by the Euclidean distance function. We said the farther you're away, the smaller the impact is of a point. And the same we do here. We say the point spread function for the 3D reconstruction is also given by the Euclidean distance to the point to be considered, and it's spatially invariant, shift invariant. Yeah, the point spread function is always 1 over r square. And the back projection data is, the back projection data is given by the convolution of the original function, and now here it's right, the convolution of the original function with the point spread function in spatial domain. And if we rewrite this in Fourier space, that means the Fourier transform of the back projection is the Fourier transform of the original signal times the point spread function. And now we can compute the original function by just dividing in Fourier space with the point spread function. And these three stars here, once again, that's the convolution in 3D. Yeah? Just is the expression of the convolution in 3D. So I don't know why these commas are in there. That's the same mistake like we had before. This should be a plus, yeah? Plus omega x plus omega y square plus omega z square. And this is the way we can unconvolve the back projected signal. That's the idea. And then we apply the inverse Fourier transform, and then we have the object reconstructed. So we collect the samples of the Fourier transform by using this back projection operator, and then we convolve it with the inverse, or we multiply it in Fourier domain with the inverse of the point spread function. And if we sample now the object from all the different directions, that means we walk around the object on a sphere, which is impractical for patients in a radiology department. Huh? We cannot have the patient within a scanner that samples the object on a sphere. Huh? That samples the object on a sphere. That won't be possible. And it's also clear that we have here a high degree of redundancy. So many rays will be sampled twice, three times, or even more often, dependent on the cone beam geometry that we are considering, or the acquisition geometry we are considering. In case of parallel projections, we measure different line integrals more often, and if we measure them more often, we have to take care of this type of redundancy for our reconstruction. Yeah. The point spread function that we are using, that means the filter kernel is dependent on the imaging geometry. Of course, if we cannot sample on the whole sphere, but we sample only parts of the sphere, then the filtering kernel has to, or the point spread function has to be adapted, because parts of it are not properly measured. And it even depends on the viewing direction which point spread function we have to apply. So when filtering is performed in the 2D domain, that's what we want to end up with. We want to transform our reconstruction algorithm in a way that we apply filtering on the measured signal, and then we do the back projection. That means the smearing back of the signal. And what do we have to do? We have our plane for the chosen angle. Please be aware of here, this angle is boldface. That means we have an angle in 3D. That is given basically by two angles. One is the angle in the XY plane, and the other one is the angle out of plane rotation. We have the convolution of the measured signal, with the filter kernel, we can transform everything into the frequency domain. That means we compute the Fourier transforms, and the convolution gets a multiplication due to the convolution theorem and the convolution properties of the Fourier transform. Yeah. The filter is often view dependent. That means it depends on the sampling of the 2D Fourier transforms that we are considering for reconstruction. And for the unit sphere filter, it is chosen this way, that you have omega u square plus omega v square. Again, the point spread function that weights that according to the distance from the currently considered point. You should not learn these things because you can look it up. Yeah, it's something that you should not learn. What we keep in mind is that we can now again reuse the idea of combining back projection and filtering. Yeah, like we did it in the 2D reconstruction scenario with the 1D projections. And now let's go on with the so-called 3D radon transform. The 3D radon transform is something that we cannot measure directly, but we have to compute. And you remember what the radon transform was in the 2D, 1D case. The radon transform was defined as, we have a 2D function. Let me draw the figure. So we have a 2D figure, and here we have our line integral. Yeah? So we have our line integral f of x, y integrated along a line. Yeah? And the radon transform is the set of all the possible line integrals you can get through the object. That was the radon transform. There is the direct correspondence between the measured points, the line integrals, and the function to be reconstructed. In the 3D, 2D case, we don't have to compute the line integrals. What we have to compute is the plane integrals. So we have to integrate the function on a plane. And what we now do is, and now listen carefully, we rotate the detector. We take the detector. We rotate the detector by angle theta around the object, and then I have an angle. And for each angle, I can get here different S values. This here is a line given, represented by S. This is the index on the line and the rotation angle theta. I get a line one characterization is given by the rotation angle, the other is the index on the line, like in the 2D, 1D projection case. And now I intersect orthogonally a plane with this line, and this plane intersects the object here on this in this flat area. So I take for each rotation angle, yeah, I select an arbitrary rotation angle, and then I intersect a intersect a plane that is orthogonal to this line here and intersects the line at the coordinate s for a given theta at the coordinate s, and then I integrate the whole function that I intersect the whole function I integrate over the plane, and I enter this single value at this point here. That's the Radon transform using plane integrals. So for a given angle, I get a 1D signal. Yeah? We don't have detectors that measure this. What we can do is we can intersect the plane with our detector plane and integrate along this line. That's what we can do. We can compute the value of such a detector as a line integral on a 2D parallel beam detector. That means we can now take a line on a detector. I'm not sure whether I'm well explaining today. The intersection of the plane with of the Radon plane with our detector plane is of course a straight line, and if we integrate, basically we sum up the x-ray values along this line, we get this plane integral here, and we enter this as one value in our PS theta function.
Yeah? But I have not only orthogonal lines hitting this plane, so I have also tilted ones.
Yeah, but I only count the orthogonal ones. I only look at the orthogonal ones. So I say I want to have this detector line, theta s, and then I only intersect the orthogonal ones here. Of course, I have also different ones, but I only look at the ones that are orthogonally intersecting, and I integrate up over them.
And it's spheric, and I have an axis, I have only one orthogonal line, or not?
Different points. You do this here. You sample it this way.
Oh, I take the whole line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you get your PS theta function, and then you rotate it, and you get another PS theta function, And what we try to sample is at the end of the day the whole Fourier domain using the PS theta function.
Okay.
Yeah, and then use Radon inversion to do the reconstruction.
And in this case, theta is a P angle or 2D angle.
So if you have here one point on the sphere, yeah, you have here these two angles. So it's this rotation and this rotation. On the sphere, two angles are sufficient. Yeah?
I want to know if the theta in the PS theta function is a 2D or a 3D?
A 2D.
Okay.
It's two. Yeah? If you want to index any point on the sphere, it's okay to have one angle in the XY plane and then the out of plane rotation, and you can reach any point. The third angle for extrinsic camera coordinates is required to incorporate the rotation around the axis, but that doesn't matter here. Yeah. The nice thing is, if I take a theta, and if I compute PS theta, that means for different intersections I integrate over the plane, I can have a central slice theorem for this transform as well. That means I take the PS theta function and I compute the Fourier transform of this PS theta function, and that is the Fourier transform of the 3D function I want to reconstruct along this line that is parallel to our PS theta function. That means if I have the 3D Fourier transform and I compute the PS theta once, twice, three times, four times, five times, I get a star of these 1D samples. Huh? And I sample the 3D Fourier transform using the Fourier transforms of the PS theta. And then I apply the inverse Fourier transform to this star. Yeah? These coordinates that I will end up, yes?
Just one question about the principle, the technical principle behind that. Did I understand it right that when there's a patient in the middle, you rotate with the source and the detector around it, and then you go by virtual planes through the patient, often go to the line S?
So far, I'm not talking about the special scenario where your patient is in. Well, this is the head of the patient, okay? And I have, for instance, the situation that here I have a 2D detector. Yeah, I have chosen a theta and a PS theta line. And then I intersect here the plane integral that defines the PS theta value. I intersect with the object and I use the intersection of this plane with a detector to compute the plane integral. And I do this for all the different S values.
So you scan scan over the surface of this imaginary detector.
Yeah, I scan over. Let me draw another figure, because the geometry is very important to understand here. So this is my detector. Okay. Pardon me?
Here,
the detector is 1D. No, the detector is 2D. So we have a detector, it's 2D. Okay? That's what we have. And then we want to have P of S theta. Yeah? And the points here on this function for the different S values corresponds to the line integral. The plane integral, sorry. That means we compute the plane integral for this value here. And we integrate intersection of this plane with our detector line, with our detector. I integrate, basically I sum up the intensity values and I enter this here in the 1D function. That's the idea. Yes?
So what we do is the 1D back projection of a point is now a circular one. So we have an intensity function, the intensity function. What we do, we get the 90 degrees, and we have a 2D intensity function here and a 2D density function here, and we summarize it up. So we have a 2D
Well, I'm not talking about back projection right now. I just explain how you construct the PS theta. You have your detector, and you, or let me start this way. This is the plane that goes through the object, okay? And the plane integral is represented by PS theta. PS theta means that's the angle, the rotation angle we are looking through the object. And then we have the different S values that we have different planes going through the object. Okay? So Here is our detector that measures the x-rays. These are the planes that we are considering. The planes intersect with the detector, not aligned by lines, but it's a straight line going somehow through the detector. If we integrate over the detector, we get the overall plane integral, because the x-ray attenuation law integrates along these lines. So each pixel that I see on the detector is an integration along the line. An integration along the plane means add up all the line integrals, line integral values.
So like in a plane, you're actually making, you're not really making a plane integral, you're making like line integrals along the plane.
No, the line
integral. You do a line integral in the new plane.
Right. But once again, if I want to. Pardon me?
What is a plane integral?
You integrate over all the values.
So you get a scalar value.
Yes. That's what you do here. You integrate over the plane. I mean, if you have a line, I was not aware that this might be a problem, line integral and plane integral. So if I have a line through the object, and this is the function fx, yz. Yeah? And you integrate along a line, then you sum up basically all the values along the line. And if you have a plane, that means you sum up all the values on the plane. And if the plane is represented by multiple straight line integrals, you can get the plane integral by summing up over all the values that measured. The detector measures the line integrals. If you want to have a plane integral, you have to intersect the detector with the plane that you want to integrate over, and then you sum up over all these values. That's the idea. Okay? I know it's different. It's strange to get the ideas on this.
Yes, that's what I actually meant in the very beginning. Next question, do you rotate the source around the patient then?
At the end, if we talk about practical applications, we rotate the source around the object, yes. Yeah. We will also rotate and move on a straight line, or we will rotate and continuously move in the table, so we will have a trajectory that is a helix. Yeah. That's a helix. And we will also discuss the coverage of the Fourier space. That means if we have these plane integrals and we have these 1D samples of the 3D Fourier transform, we have to make sure that we properly sample the whole 3D Fourier transform. And the question is, in which situations do we guarantee that we have a complete sampling for an artifact-free reconstruction? Okay. I'm very sorry that I was not clear on the plane integral. Okay. Good. Now let me just give you a hint to one of our research projects. This is not part of the slides, but it just tells you how easy it is sometimes to bring things together, and how this can affect your algorithm design. Who attended interventional image processing in summer? Who didn't? Please show. Okay. I'll show you now something. And those who attended interventional image processing, they will just sit, lean back, and enjoy. So let's look at the following. If you have a 3D point, yeah, and here is your optical center. Or let's think about cameras first. So here is your optical center. And you project the 3D point into the image plane. Yeah? Like your retina, You have a lens, and the 3D point is projected on your retina. So this is the point where the projection ray hits your retina or the CCD chip, okay? And now you move the camera. So I look at, what's your name?
Dominic.
I look at Dominic's tip of his nose, okay, with the left eye. And now I move, and I look again with the left eye to his tip of his nose. Yeah. So this is his nose tip, and this is my retina, and this is the point here. Okay. This is the translation vector. This is the translation vector, where how I translated and rotated. I translated my eye and rotated it. Okay. If you look at the figure here, you see that this vector characterizing this point, this vector characterizing this point, and the translation vector, they sit on a plane. Okay? They sit on a plane. They sit on a plane. We call this epipolar plane, just to make it complicated. Yeah? But they sit on a plane. You agree on that? That was found out by a researcher in 1982. It was a very famous paper, that these three vectors sit on a plane. Okay. That means if you think about X-rays, and if you look at a point, now I take Dominic, I put him into an X-ray system. Yeah? I put him into an X-ray system with an X-ray focus and a detector. And then I rotate the X-ray system and I see again the nose tip from another direction. And I can say that the nose tip in the two X-ray projections and the nose tip in 3D, they sit on a plane. Okay? They sit on a plane. So if I intersect this plane here with the image plane of my detector of image one, hold on a second, and image two, the intersection here of the plane will sit on a line here and here as well. We call these epipolar lines. And due to the fact that I'm looking through him using an X-ray system, I can say the plane integral, meaning the sum of the X-ray values here and the sum of the X-ray values here, should be constant. Because I look from two different directions through the same object where one point sits on, and the plane integral, the intersection of the epipolar plane with his skull going through the nose tip, the integral is the same. Okay? We call this epipolar geometry, so I can compute out of a calibrated scenario these two lines and integrate over the lines, and the two values have to be constant. Now Leah is saying, so what? What we can do then is we can easily check whether he has moved in between the two images. Because if he has moved between the two acquisitions, so he was just looking around because the doctor was showing up with some horrible device and he was moving, we can, by just comparing two plane integrals, we can find out that the patient has moved. So we can classify the situation whether movement happened or not. Yeah? And the question now is, how can you use this for motion compensation and things like that? That's what we do within a PhD research project in our lab. Sir?
I just wanted to say, 3 points always sit on a plane.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah. What can I say?
Because that was nothing special.
Yeah, the point is, you know, that you grab the mathematical situation that things like that happen. Yeah? So, you have these 3 points, this, and then this point here sits on the projection line. But a very important insight. In my arrogant character, I would say, yes, that's a terrific, terrific result presented in 1982 in one of the most prestigious journals. Somebody found out that 3 points sit on a plane. But it's bringing things together. Also bringing epipolar geometry together with plane integrals. If I explain it to you, you say yes, but you have to see that those guys who do image reconstruction are usually physicists, and those guys who do epipolar geometry are computer vision guys, and these two communities have more or less no overlap. And in our lab we have this overlap, that's why it's called lab, Franconian lab, this overlap, and we can combine these things. Yes?
Like, let's say you take one image, like on your left plane, for example,
yeah,
you get 2 points, right?
And I get 1 point, yeah?
No, you get 2 points. Like, you get your origin and where your node is.
In the projection, these two, yes?
Yeah, you get 2 points.
Yeah?
And then when you go, like, your second projection, let's say your patient moved. So actually, you, like, your plane moved, yes, but you didn't know the plane before because you only had 2 points. So
no.
You actually see the patient move just by looking, because it's like you have 2 points in the first one, which define a line, not
yeah,
a plane.
Yes.
And you have 2 points in the second one, which also define a line, but not a plane.
Yeah.
How do you know that the patient moved?
Well, if you identify the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you assume that the patient has not moved, then the two line integrals have to be the same. And if they are not the same, something happened in between. The geometry is not consistent.
Okay.
You see? Yeah. The other nose, if Dominic is not moving, like most of the time, he's not moving here, everything is fine, the line integrals are the same. If he's moving, and we assume the point correspondences and the epipolar geometry assumption, then the two plane integrals, they will be different. Sorry, and if they are different, then we know it's inconsistent.
But even if he doesn't move, let's say you come from the back of the head, for
yes,
example, and make this X-ray projection, the plane integral will be one because you're going through, like, I don't know, the bones and
yes,
the ear or whatever,
yeah,
whatever else. And let's say I don't move and I come from the other side, the line, like the plane integral, will be different, even so.
No.
You're coming from another, like you're going through another path.
No.
No?
No, because if everything is consistent, your epipolar in the reconstruction, your epipolar plane is intersecting with the detector elements.
So it doesn't matter what was on the way, basically.
It matters. I mean, you have the situation here, you have your two projection planes,
yeah,
and the head is sitting in between. Yeah? And then you have your nose tip, and then you have your epipolar line here, and your epipolar line here. And it's exactly one plane through the object, where the optical center sits on, the nose tip sits on, and the projection point sits on. It's exactly the same plane that we are considering through the object. It's exactly the same plane. We integrate over this plane, and the plane integral is visible here and visible here. It's an intersection, one plane intersection with my skull or Dominic's skull. It's exactly the same. And you can do this for all the corresponding points, and you can use this for detecting patient motion by just looking at the X-ray projections of a calibrated system. And that was a brilliant observation of one of my team members. That was André Eichert.
But then it's the sum on the line corresponds with the sum of the plane through the head.
Of course.
Yes, I think that's the problem.
That's not a problem, that's the observation. The line, the plane integral, the integral over all the values, the sum over all the values over the plane can be computed by using the line integrals and then sum up the line integrals. And the two values have to be the same. I don't get the are you now happy or still unhappy? She's still unhappy. Can you make her happy?
It's because the line in the detector corresponds with the plane through
yes,
the head.
That I understand.
And the sum
What I don't get is that the line integral.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you look on the plane. If you look from the right on the plane and you go, you will summarize all values in the plane. It's the same. You look from a tilting of 90 degrees.
Are you looking
up
at the same plane, basically?
Yes.
Yes, it's the epipolar plane. I look at the same plane.
Okay. Now.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Is there anybody who didn't get that? Yeah, we have the epipolar plane for two corresponding points. And how do we integrate over the plane? We can use line integrals from different directions and then sum up the line integrals. And that's actually what we are doing here. Okay, I think we should quit here and we continue on Thursday with cone beam reconstruction. Thank you. War das so unklar jetzt?
Auf dem Detektor ist ja quasi repräsentiert ja eigentlich eine Ebene.
Na, das ist die Linie ist der Schnittpunkt der beiden Ebenen, ja.
Genau, das Problem weiß, dass wenn man diesen Punkt hier quasi als 3D darstellt, wenn ich zum Beispiel die Nasenspitze hier anschauen will, das nicht als Ebene sehe, sondern als Linie, dann macht es ja einen Unterschied, wenn ich das aufzoome, wenn ich durch den Hinterkopf gehe oder strecke, schon als wenn man den Weg lenkt, dass ich aber auch mehr Schwäche.
Ja, aber ich finde, eine ganze Ebene.
Das geht.